Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. Today, we continue with our series of programs on the topic of the I-81 replacement and the redevelopment of the East Adams Street area of Syracuse. My guest today is Terry Weaver. She's a public affairs reporter for the Syracuse Post-Standard and Syracuse.com with a concentration on state government and I-81. And recently, she was named as one of its editors. Terry, welcome back to the program and congratulations on the promotion.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. And so let me just start with, I want to tap the fact that you have been watching this kind of all along and get some of your thoughts regarding that. But let me just start with a really basic question. It feels to me like the process for deciding what is going to replace I-81, it's been going on for a very long time. And has that process been longer than usual for a project like this in your experience?
Well, I've covered a couple of these massive construction and infrastructure projects that have to be approved through the federal government with this type of rigor that we're seeing with I-81 with a really long-term environmental review process. And so they do take multiple years. But for this one, we have been talking about the future of I-81 in Syracuse for about a decade. And so it has been a long conversation and many people are anxious to get going. Many people are still a bit unsatisfied with where we're headed. But yes, we are nearing the final chapter of this discussion. And you're right, it has taken a long, long time. But we are sort of in the final act of deciding what our highway system is going to look like in Syracuse.
So on that last point, tell me more exactly where we are in the decision-making process. I mean, what stage are we at and what else has to happen before this thing is finally finalized and we can start planning for a particular path that's going to be taken?
Right. So this summer, your listeners may remember that both the State Transportation Department and the Federal Highway Administration released a massive report document called officially the Draft Environmental Impact Statement. Five-inch thick book of documents, but also is available online. And that is an official act by the government to trigger a public comment period. And so they released their most up-to-date plans of what they want to do. And as we all know, their preferred method for figuring out what to do with I-81 is to tear down a portion of it that runs from about Oakwood Cemetery up to I-690 and make that a ground level boulevard, and then reroute the highway traffic around the eastern side of the city onto what is now Interstate 481. So in the future, according to the current proposal, I-81 would run from Tennessee up to Canada. And if you didn't want to stop in Syracuse, you would instead drive through DeWitt and make your way up that way around the eastern side of the city. So that's the plans. It was not shocking that that's what they released this summer because we had seen a previous iteration of this 2 years ago. But they did make a few adjustments to it. The plan also includes tearing down a portion of I-690 in the middle of the city, from about Tobin's Furniture Store down to where the Syracuse Popcorn Building is, if people drive that route, and making that straighter, making and rebuilding that section of bridges. So that's what most of the project is. But with this new iteration of the report, we saw some changes to what might be happening along the current 481, especially in DeWitt, with some additional attention spent on the East Genesee area. If people are going home from work at the end of the day, they may get off 481 at East Genesee Street and head east past Wegmans out to Manlius or Fayetteville. So there's been increased attention to that corridor as well. But what happens next is this public comment period exists. Anyone can comment. That closes, as we're taping now, that closes on Friday, October 14th. Okay. So very soon. But then the officials, the government officials, will take all of those comments, whether they're audio, whether they're video, whether they're written, and they have to sort of put them in categories and readdress all those concerns and ideas. That will happen this fall and into winter. And then we probably in the very early stages of 2022 will see what's called a final environmental impact statement, yet another massive document produced by the government. But this time, the final document, the public comment period will be over. It's really just an unveiling of here's what we're going to do. And the Federal Highway Administration has final say to give its stamp of approval. That is almost always a sure-fired thing. They will then issue what's called a record of decision. Yes, state DOT, you can go ahead with this plan. And that's when state DOT can start letting out contracts, really getting into the nitty-gritty of what this massive construction project would look like. That is also the point, just as a tail end to this long explanation.
It's been very helpful.
Also the point where we might see lawsuits start. Okay. If you didn't like the project, if you don't like the plan, those lawsuits often come after that record of decision is issued.
And I imagine given some of the things that we have heard so far, there will be one or two lawsuits, I'm guessing. Let me ask you one quick follow-up here. You use the word preferred at this point. This is the preferred option, the community grid. Unpack preferred. Where does preferred mean that's, what is the probability that this is what it's going to be? I don't know if it's possible for you to do 90%, 70%.
Yeah, it's a legal term that the state is using as part of this federally required environmental review process. So they are using that legal term, that jargon, on purpose. But I think for common sense purposes, it means that is the plan the state wants. That's the plan Governor Hochul wants. That's the plan that Transportation Secretary Buttigieg wants. It's the plan Chuck Schumer has said he wants, the Senate Majority Leader. And so I think, anyone can look at all those powerful players and say that, barring any last minute legal win by someone bringing a lawsuit, this is what is expected to happen in Syracuse.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse Post-Standard public affairs reporter and editor, Terry Weaver. So I want to ask a bigger picture question here. This decision, or the process of this decision in recent years, has come, it seems to me, at the intersection of different moments for the city of Syracuse and its future and the nation. In terms of politics and in terms of larger discussions that we're having about, particularly in Syracuse, again, the city's past and its future. And it seems to have tapped, obviously, some pretty strong emotions. So I was just wondering if you could reflect on that a little bit. Do you think that this question of I-81, on the one hand, it's a highway, but on the other, it seems to have become a symbolic football, or I don't know what the right metaphor is, but for bigger issues and conflicts here in Syracuse and more broadly?
I think you're right. And I think it is more than symbolic. I think it's a reality. I think, this process that I just described with this long-term and sometimes infuriating and taxing, complicated environmental process, that is meant to bring about environmental justice. That is what that federal program and law is meant to do, so that transportation officials have to study, what are the harms we might cause with this project? What are some of the things we could heal with this project? And that's really what that big that's what a lot of this conversation for the last 2 or 3 years has really been about, minimizing harm, trying to make up for past misdeeds. And so the idea of seeking environmental justice through a, you know, bricks and mortar transportation project, that is one of the goals. That's one of the goals from the state and from the federal government. When Transportation Secretary Buttigieg was here in Syracuse to talk about this project, I asked him specifically, are these kind of massive highway projects a form of reparations? And he said, yes, they are. You know, that decades ago, projects like this in Syracuse and New Orleans and other cities throughout the nation tore apart neighborhoods that were often brown and black. They were often places where brown and black people had been forced to live because of the frustrations of getting a bank loan to buy a house. And then once they were all in one place, a big highway project would come in and tear the neighborhood in two. And that's literally what happened here in Syracuse. And so part of the discussion is, how can we figure out how to do better this time around and help some of the families and folks who either were hurt by that or who still live in the shadow of the highway. And a large part of that is trying to get people who were affected by the highway project and the highway now into the job pipeline for some of these construction jobs. And that has started. It's very small, it's very slow, but that job training has actually started here in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And there's a big commitment, I think, by a lot of activists and a lot of politicians, both at the city and the state level, to really get more people from Syracuse, from Onondaga County, from DeWitt and other places that are going to be affected by this construction, to get those folks jobs and contracts on this $2 billion project.
So it's been 10 years, as you pointed out, one way or another, that we've been talking about this. How would you assess the success by both state and local officials to get the input of the community on the decision? You mentioned that we're at the end of this public comment process for this environmental impact statement, and by the time our listeners hear this, that will have just closed. But more generally, how would you assess the success of the officials in getting community input?
I would say it's mixed. I would say on the one hand, I think state officials have have done a good job at different points in our 10-year conversation of really opening up and talking with people one-on-one and answering their questions. Some of your listeners may have gone to some of these info sessions that started in the summer and ran through, I think, late September, both downtown and different communities. And, you know, they go out and they take the plans, they take the giant maps, they stand around, you can have a long one-on-one discussion with someone about what's going to happen in my neighborhood, or where is this highway going to go, and they've used some of those conversations both 2 years ago and this summer to take another look at some of the parts of the project where there are concerns and criticism. So I think, you know, on the one hand, that's good. On the other hand, you know, people who get in their car at 6 o'clock at night to come to a public meeting about a highway, I think sometimes they have an expectation there's going to be a more formal presentation and more of a person at a podium who can take questions and answer. And that's not how the state DOT has done this rollout for these massive reports. And so I think, you know, some people are a little confused and because those expectations are there. And at the same time, I think, you know, there's the documents and the reports are public, both on paper and online. At the same time, you know, I've read a lot of those reports. They are massive. They are complicated. They don't lend themselves to the easiest reading in the world. And so, you know, you really have to dedicate yourself to dig in and understand these. And that's part of what shaped our coverage at Syracuse.com, is that we want, you know, we're the people and we're talking to the experts who are knowledgeable about these complicated reports and trying to bring those to people in a way that's more easily understood.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Terry Weaver. She's a public affairs reporter and editor at the Syracuse Post-Standard and Syracuse.com. We've talked about how the community grid is the preferred option at this point and what preferred means. And you've been watching this for a long time. Emotions have run high on this, as we have discussed. What so far is the best argument that you have heard for not doing the community grid? What's the best argument that you've heard for rebuilding an elevated highway?
Well, there certainly are a lot of people in our community who, you know, are like, just tear it. If it's old and it's not going to be safe and it's crumbling and we need to replace it, you know, they really literally want the DOT to just replace the highway as it is. And why can't you do that? Why can't you just tear it down and build a new one? And I think, you know, to a degree, I think if the DOT could do that, they would consider that more seriously. There's a couple problems with that, though. One is right now, if anyone works at Upstate or goes to the VA or goes to a ball game up on the hill, you may well know that when you're trying to get on and off at Adams and Harrison Street off of I-81, that exit 18, that is a traffic tangle. It can be a nightmare, especially in the morning commute. And it also is three times as dangerous, according to state transportation stats, as other similar interchanges on those kind of federal highways. So that is one of the things that the state's trying to solve. It's not just trying to deal with an aging highway, but it's trying to make a safer experience for people to get to and from work and to and from school or a Carrier Dome event. So that's that one thing. The other thing is that I-81 right there in that same section I'm talking about, you may or may not know the speed limit there is 45 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. We may not all drive 45 miles per hour there, which may account for some of those accidents, but you know, it's, and that's because it is not built to today's federal highway safety standards. So if the state was going to rebuild 81, they would be required to make it taller, wider, and sort of slower. The curves would have to be less sharp, both for those exits and for the exchange with I-690. And so that would further impact the people who work and live and use the space in and around that highway, underneath that highway. Think about King School, you know, that's right there. Think about the Cancer Center and the Upstate buildings that are there. You know, those would all, you know, that highway would inch closer to those buildings and in some case take out about two dozen buildings. That would lead from 81 all the way up through Little Italy. So that is, you know, that's part of the challenge of this highway project. It's not, you know, it's not in an open field where you could just make it bigger. It's in an urban environment that is sort of outgrown its own space.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting, and I think often gets lost in the discussions that I've heard. So that's an argument, though, from necessity, right?
Right.
Give me the best argument that you've heard for the grid that looks to a more positive promise. You know, not just we have to do it to avoid this, and this, which you laid out very clearly, but there are other arguments that are kind of more hopeful. What's the best one you've heard in favor of the grid?
Well, the state's argument for the grid that I've talked with Mark Frechette about several times, and you may have talked with him too. Your listeners may have heard him. He's the project director for the whole I-81 construction period. And, you know, his argument is that, you know, we're not rebuilding just a highway. We are building a traffic grid. And so his argument is, yes, some of the highway traffic is going to funnel around onto 41 and go around the city. But about half of it isn't. It's still going to, you know, sort of seep into the city from different points. Right now, we have sort of two main points. If you don't use surface streets, right now, we sort of have two main points to get in the city, I-690 or I-81. And that's sort of how people get into downtown and the hill. Now, the state's argument is with the grid, with taking out most of those bridges and elevated highways, traffic should flow like water. People will find their own routes to and from work, to and from the dome, to and from the hospitals, and that it, you know, and that will disperse traffic so that instead of having a buildup at that exit 18, for example, people would have five or six different routes to choose from. You could argue those routes are there now. You know, you could take Crowell Street, you could take Irving Street, and, you know, and many people do. But by removing the highway, more people will be forced to find different routes along the way. And then the state also argues that it is building new sort of release valves for some of this traffic. So that there's supposed to be a new exit. If you're headed from Tully up to see an afternoon game at the Dome, you might get off at Colvin Street, a new exit there, and go up the backside of the hill and park that way. If you're headed to the hospitals, which I know is a great concern for a lot of people, have their medical appointments and want to get to the hospitals there on the hill, instead of taking that exit 18 that you would now, you would get off 690 on a couple new exits and entrances at the Krause and Irving area. So they're saying that they're changing our traffic patterns. If you're headed to St. Joe's, say you live in North Syracuse and you go to St. Joe's a lot, you should still be able to get to St. Joe's without stopping at a stoplight if you choose. Those exits that are above or north of those exits that are north of Interstate 690 now will still be there for you, so that you could get off on the north side of Syracuse and get to St. Joe's. So that's the state's argument, and I understand that it is a complicated, hard thing to imagine. It's a challenging thing to imagine, to take away what we know of and we've known of for 50 years as how we get into and from places, and to, you know, and to sort of put pressure on individual people to say, you know, your commute's going to change a bit, but it's going to be okay. And that's the promise the state's making. And, you know, they are the engineers. We have to hope that they're right, but they are trying to make that case. And, you know, I guess we'll know when we'll see, you know, I can't predict it, but that's the case they're making.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Syracuse Post-Standard reporter and editor, Terry Weaver. In what you just said, I did not hear what I have sometimes heard, which is a vision for the grid itself, that this is going to be a way to generate more community, more vibrant neighborhood by getting rid of this elevated highway. It's going to help unite the hill and the downtown in different ways. But you didn't make that argument. You were talking very much about traffic patterns. So do you think that some of those promises might be overblown?
I'm not sure they're overblown. I would say I'm not sure we know enough details about them. I do think the spirit of that is in the proposal, and it's what the state DOT has said they want. It's certainly what the mayor has said he wants, Mayor Ben Walsh. And so as it is now, tearing down that highway and doing the preferred community grid plan, the state estimates that's going to free up about 10 to 12 acres in that area, mainly around what's Almond Street now, especially around sort of think about where the Dr. King School is in that mm-hmm. area. So for now, you know, and I think a lot of people have a lot of different ideas about what that might be and who gets to make those decisions. And that's not 100% crystal clear at this moment. The state right now, I think, officially has the lead and the ownership of much of that land that's going to be freed up. But clearly, the city and the county want to have a say in how that land is used, how it's zoned, what it's going to be. Currently, and you know, freeing up that, taking down that highway would create some space for a little bit of park space, bike lanes, things like that. That's what's in the schematics now from the state. And I think there's a effort to do that. But what exactly it looks like, will that be long-term development that will bring some new energy to the city? I think that's the hope, but I don't think we have a lot of concrete answers on that yet.
Just about another minute, I wanted to ask this question about Governor Hochul to you, because you've written about Governor Hochul, and it's been mostly through the lens of central New York. What kind of start do you think she's off to?
Well, I think she has tried to show herself as a different type of leader than we saw with former Governor Andrew Cuomo. She's talked a lot about and made some decisions that I think show her effort to be more transparent, whether that's with some COVID numbers, with COVID deaths and nursing homes. She's also tried to free up some of the backlog with freedom of information requests, but she's still being herself, I think. She's traveling a lot. She's going around to different parts of the state, which she was known to do as lieutenant governor. And so I think that she is trying to, I think she's really, you know, trying to introduce herself to people who don't know her, who don't know her work ethic, who don't know what she's been doing as lieutenant governor for the past few years. And so I think, you know, that's what I see her doing, and really trying to show people that that she's a different type of leader, but at the same time, she's a hard worker. And I think that's the case she's trying to make to New York voters.
That was Terry Weaver. Terry, I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk with me and wish you the best of health.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Assistant producer is Jacqueline Witwicky, and the program is edited by Mark Lefonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.